Reports of the death of the communal or family meal have been not totally exaggerated, as it turns out. According to a new report from the Food Marketing Institute, nearly half of all meals and snacks are now eaten alone.
As for breakfast and lunch in particular, most of us are eating them alone these days, if we're eating them at all. Yeah, some people are flat out skipping lunch. According to a 2012 report, we eat them at our desks or we just don't eat them.
Roberto Ferdman joins us now. He covers food and economics for the Washington Post Wonk blog. He recently wrote a piece on the rise of dining alone in America. Roberto, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
Well, back in 1985, you report the New York Times said that it's no longer odd to dine alone. What are the latest numbers on that today?
Isn't that funny, considering how we eat today? The numbers, you kind of pointed to them. This is the most recent in what's really a series of research on eating alone, the instances in which people alone or the frequency with which people eat alone. This particular one found that more than half of all eating opportunities are had alone. So snacks at your desk or snacks on the go, breakfast at home or on the go, lunch and dinner. But others kind of support this exact notion. In fact, the U.S. Time Use Service shows that the majority of Americans report regularly eating alone. And these numbers have all increased dramatically over the past few decades and are seen by experts within or market industry analysts as only rising going forward. The headline of this piece was the most American thing there is, eating alone. And that's not because you're American if you eat alone, or that there aren't other things like, I don't know, hanging a flag outside of your house that might not be more American. But eating alone is really at the center. It's at the intersection of all these different happenings, these trends in the United States that have to do with a lot more than just food.
Right. Part of the story here is that a lot of us, more of us, are living alone, too.
If you look back to the 1960s, something like 13% of all households had a single occupant. In the 1970s, it rose almost to 20%. But today, that number is almost like 30%. So close to a third of all households have a single occupant, meaning that you're eating alone if you're at home in 30% of households. So that has had a huge effect on the number of people that eat alone and the number of times that people eat alone. Part of what's driven the rise of single households is the fact that we're no longer getting married as quickly as we used to. Something like 1 in 5 25-year-olds have never been married. That number is significantly higher than it used to be. People aren't really getting married until into their 30s today, which means that through their 20s, they're either living with roommates or they're living by themselves. And because of both of these things, they're eating a lot of meals by themselves.
And for the people that do live with someone else, be it a family member or a roommate, is dinner sort of the last holdout?
So if you look at, I've actually written about the family supper and the rise or fall of it, and it's held fairly steady. This particular study found that something like 67%, or roughly two-thirds of all dinners are had with company, so with other people. That doesn't mean they're had with family. It could be had with a friend, had with a roommate that isn't family. But what this shows is that dinner is in some ways more sacred than the other meals. But I think that has to do with the fact that we're very busy and we're very busy leading up until dinner. Dinner is kind of the one time that we can sit down with others and have a meal that we aren't rushed or aren't skipping, as you mentioned before.
And
Sorry.
Roberto. I was going to say part of the story of being busy is that a lot of us are eating lunch at our desks at work. Veronica and I eat lunch at our desks often in the same office. So I don't know if we're technically eating alone or not, but we're not alone in that. This is getting more and more common, isn't it, Roberto?
It's far more common. It's something like 60% of lunches or 65% of lunches, I forget the precise number, but are now either had at your desk or not had at all. So you're right to point out that people are eating at their desks, which is kind of sad. There's a reason why people refer to like sad desk lunches or sad desk salads. In fact, there's even a little bit discussion around like what's okay to eat at your desk. And the fact that we're even talking about that shows how common the practice is. But it's also that people are skipping these meals. We don't have time for them.
That seems unusual to me. I mean, maybe I'm late to the party here, but it seems as though people don't usually skip lunch. They skip breakfast. So what does it say about our society that we're too crunched to even eat lunch at all?
Well, this is actually something that's become more and more common. It's not that we aren't eating between breakfast and dinner. It's that we might be replacing lunch with two smaller snacks. I would say smaller meals, but which are effectively snacks at different points in the day. So you might have a banana, a fruit, or some sort of food to keep you going, and then have something else in between what would be your lunch, but the lunch that you're not having, and dinner. Breakfast, however, is actually the meal that people skip most often. I think that people are just too pressed for time. And most recently, we've seen that some of the research around the importance of eating breakfast in terms of what it does for our health is kind of under fire. So who's to say that the people who aren't eating breakfast aren't somehow healthier for skipping the meal?
Talking to Roberto Ferdman with the Washington Post about his recent piece on eating alone in the United States. Most of us are doing it. We're doing it more. We're eating lunch at our desk. We're eating home alone. Some of us are just skipping meals altogether. You can let us know your experience at 800-642-1234. Do you eat many meals alone? Or do you go out of your way to make sure you eat at least some of them with other people? Do you see a backlash either starting now, Roberto, or maybe in the future where people are saying, hey, this is terrible. We need to start eating together again.
I mean, in terms of a movement, there isn't a comprehensive movement to overcome this. And basically everyone I've spoken to agrees that this is pretty much headed in one direction. It's the direction in which we eat alone more often than not, and people will continue to replace certain meals, not necessarily the same exact meal every day, but for snacks because we don't have a lot of time. And you know, this is playing out in all sorts of interesting ways. For instance, within the fast food sector, for which breakfast has become really, really important. You see McDonald's extending its breakfast throughout the entire day. You saw Taco Bell, last year beginning to sell breakfast and really focusing on things that are portable, because people basically won't buy things that aren't portable. And that really speaks to how important it is to eat these days. It's basically something that we need to do throughout the course of our busy days, but don't sit down and take the time to enjoy.
Now, you said this is a phenomenon that's at the nexus of a bunch of things that are going on in American culture, like marrying later and living alone longer. Are there similar trends, though, going on in other countries, or is the U.S. Sort of the forerunner on this one?
This is something that's happening elsewhere as well. The pushing back, basically, of marriage is not just happening in the United States, though it's happening in the United States a little bit more drastically than it is elsewhere. And the time crunch is happening elsewhere as well. So if you look, for instance, to Europe, this is the sort of thing that's being noticed as well. But America as it is, or the United States as it has been for other things, is kind of leading the pack in this trend of eating alone, but it's more of a stigma, or it was more of a stigma in the United States than it has been elsewhere. So I think that's why it feels more significant. Even anecdotally, for me, I think about the instances in which I began to eat alone and how it's become normalized over time. I was overcoming, you know, the kind of the social stigma attached to it, which is part of why I brought up that 1985 article. Clearly, they're talking about eating alone and how it's becoming okay, because a lot of people fear that it's not.
Well, and you even write that restaurants are starting to accommodate some solo diners in different ways. Can you tell us about that?
So the traditional way to accommodate solo diners is to house them at the bar. And there are instances in which restaurants have actually broadened the number of seats that they have at bars. But then there are also restaurants which have just incorporated bench-like seating. Jose Andres in Washington, D.C., is one whose new restaurant, in fact, caters exactly to that. He has bench-like seating so that people can come and sit as they come and go on their own. Long tables that don't seat a particular number of people are another perfect example. Bench-like tables, or where diners can sit with people that they don't know. There are really many different ways to accommodate them. There's even a bit of a philosophy around the comfort of eating alone that involves only sitting one placemat or one place setting at a two-person table, so that when someone sits down, you don't have to take away the second place place setting. Which, you know, it's kind of a funny thing. I agree, but at the same time, it might have a kind of significant philosophical impact on how you feel about sitting down, because you're sitting down to a table that's for one person instead of a table that was for two, but sadly you couldn't convince someone else to come eat with you.
We're talking with Washington Post reporter Roberto Ferdman about the rise of dining alone at home or out or at work here in the United States.
And you can join us. Does this sound a bit like what's going on in your life? Maybe breakfast and lunch alone, maybe skipped altogether. Do you feel okay eating by yourself in a restaurant? Is it something you're comfortable with, maybe that you didn't used to be? What is that experience like for you now? And do you think we're losing out on anything by eating alone? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're talking with Washington Post reporter Roberto Ferdman about the rise of dining alone in America.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. Does this sound like your life? Are you eating more meals alone, whether at home, at your desk, at work, at a restaurant, or maybe just breakfast and lunch alone? Or do you skip those, as more and more people are doing? Do you wish you had meals with other people more often than you do? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We go to our callers now. We've got Anne on the line in Wauwatosa. Hi, Anne.
Hi. I just wanted to say I'm 51 years old. I'm a very social person, but I love eating alone because at a moment's notice, I can go to any restaurant I want, even a restaurant that I just want to try out. I like sitting at the bar, but you know, sometimes I bring a book and I just want to sit and read. I just think of all the spectacular meals I would have missed out on if I had to, oh, darn, wait for somebody to, you know, go with me. And so I love going by myself.
Have you always felt that comfortable doing it, Anne, or did you have to build up to it and now you're comfortable?
No, you know what? I've always felt comfortable doing it. Like I said, I like to go to movies by myself because if it's really bad, you can just get up and go. You don't have to have a consensus.
Good point.
And I have a lot of friends who, you know, oh, I don't like that kind of food. And I don't, you know, I can go and try because I love all different kinds of food. So, you know, and I have met some wonderful people because you're sitting there alone. You're kind of a target. Hey, what are you doing? People talk to you. What are you reading? That kind of thing.
Anne, that's terrific. Thank you so much for sharing your experience about that. She feels very empowered by doing it, and she's stressing there the freedom of choosing where you want to go, when you want to go. Definite perks, don't you think, Roberto?
I kind of had the urge to clap on air, but I held myself back. No, I think it's actually very astute of her, and a lot of people don't realize that the distinction that they're making when they decide to not do something by themselves. Eating out is a perfect example, but people tend to weigh doing something on their own with doing it with someone else, when in reality, if you're sitting alone at home on a Friday night, you're making the decision between doing the thing and not doing the thing, both of those things being done alone. So I think it's fantastic that she likes to go out and eat and go to movies alone. I feel exactly the same way.
And Anne mentioned sometimes she does this with a book, and that's important to me if I'm dining out alone, or actually eating at home alone for that matter. I want something to do. I want something to keep me occupied. I got to have a book or something, maybe a tablet in front of me. Is that a trend we're seeing more out in public?
That's very much a trend, so much so that there are restaurants that are either accommodating people who come in not just with books but with tablets and I guess the larger iPhones, essentially Apple products, which Apple, I'm sure, loves. I think that both speaks to the growing acceptance of the trend, but then also in kind of a weird, perverse way, the fact that there's still a stigma around eating alone, because part of that is occupying yourself. But I think often, and I hope I'm not just projecting, but maybe I am projecting, part of that is also bringing something and putting it next to you so people know that,
oh, yeah,
yes, you are alone, but you're also with this book.
Right. If you're just sitting there, you're just a guy sitting there. If there's a book, it's like, oh, that guy's doing a thing. thing. So yeah, no, that's me too, Roberto.
See,
for
but
sure.
Isn't there something wrong with that we feel we need to use books and smartphones as sort of armor for dining out alone,
yes.
where someone like Anne can just it sounds like just go and sit there and be comfortable.
Yeah, more power to Anne.
More power to Anne. I think there's definitely something wrong with it, but that doesn't mean I don't still do it.
As do most people, I betcha. Well, we're talking right now to Washington Post's Roberto Ferdman about the rise of dining alone in America. Nearly half of all meals and snacks are now eaten alone. And we want to know if you find this in your life at 800-642-1234. How comfortable are you with dining alone? What do you think about this trend? And we'll go next to Anna in Anisac, Illinois. Hi there, Anna.
Hi there. You guys are actually leaning right into my next comment is, since with social media, I feel like people don't necessarily feel like they're eating alone when they go out. People usually post where they're at, what they're doing. So just because people are out supposedly eating by themselves, maybe they don't actually feel like they're alone or by themselves. Hmm.
Right, and that's a relatively new thing. Thanks for bringing that up, Anna. That you mean that you may be physically alone at a table in a room, but you don't feel alone. So maybe that's the difference in comfort, Roberto.
Well, what's funny about that is that there's actually something in sociology. There's actually a name for it that's evading me at the moment. But what it centers around is the idea that we are kind of at the center of our own movie. We're the main character in our own movie, but we're not the main character in other people's movies. So what that means is when we go to a restaurant and we're sitting by ourselves, we're sitting there playing on our phones thinking, you know, my God, everyone's noticing that I'm here alone. But the truth is that people don't actually notice that you're there alone. They might notice it in passing, but no one is sitting there worrying about, you know, me who's there with my book that's sitting flat on the table.
Anna, thanks a lot for the call. We'll go to Judy in Appleton next. Judy, hi.
Hi. I have a question as to whether other people have the same problem that I have with walking into a restaurant and requesting a table for just one. I always, even if I think about it ahead of time, find myself saying just one or only one instead of assertively saying one, which is what I would say if there were two or three.
Do you feel like it's almost an apology, Judy? Oh, only one?
Yes.
Yeah. Judy, thanks so much. Thanks for calling in. Roberto, there's still, probably in public or in private, we feel a little like we're letting somebody down if we're eating by ourselves.
I appreciate that comment. I actually haven't given that any thought, but I'm pretty sure that every time I've eaten alone, I've said just one. So I'll never say that and not think about it from here on out.
I was trying to mentally do it in my head, and I think she's right. You would always want to put something before the number one, something to practice there. And we're going to go next to Jen. Jen joins us in Vernon. Jen, hi.
Hi. I was just thinking that most people, when they do choose to eat with other people, are typically on their smartphones or tablets, and they're not interacting with the other people. So it's pretty much the same thing as eating by themselves.
Ah, you're flipping that around a little and looking at the phenomenon of being alone together with other people, which is worse or better, I guess. So what do you think about that quandary, Roberto?
That's an interesting. First of all, I'm curious to know where you're eating out, because while I see people eating, sitting at tables, playing on their phones, I don't know if the majority of people around the table are. But actually, there's a bit of an annoyance with this habit, to the point where there are restaurants in both D.C. And New York, kind of where I shift back and forth from, that force patrons to put away their phones or even to give in their phones when they first arrive at the restaurant. So they're addressing that very problem, forcing people to be present, not just with not just with their food, but also with the people at their table. It annoys me. It's, you know, I grew up in a household. When I was young, we didn't have tablets and phones and stuff, but I still, when I go home to dinner, bringing out your cell phone is not okay.
Jen, thanks for the call. Roberto, briefly, as we wrap up, looking at this research, is this motivating you personally to try to eat more meals with other people in or out?
I actually think that my takeaway from this is to embrace eating alone, to understand that it's actually not it's only something that is bizarre historically or traditionally here in the United States, and is something that's accepted elsewhere in Europe in particular. So I've had actually the complete converse or opposite reaction to that. I want to embrace eating out in the same way that I want to embrace going to the movies alone, as one of the callers said, and doing other things alone, because they're okay. And we leave it there.
It's a fantastic place to leave it. Roberto, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me. It's been my pleasure.
That was Roberto Ferdman, reporter covering food and economics for Washington Post's Wonk Blog. He joined us to talk about the rise of solo dining in the United States.